Welcome to episode 17 of the Your Kids Next Read podcast, in which we talk about books and reading for kids of all ages. And thank you again for all those five-star ratings on Apple Podcasts. It really makes our day to see them. I'm Alison Tate, author of middle grade adventure series The Mapmaker Chronicles, The Adaban Cipher, and my latest The Maven and Reeve mystery series. And I'm here with my co-host, the very excited Megan Daly, celebrity teacher librarian, blogger at Children's Books Daily, and author of Raising Readers, How to Nurture a Child's Love of Books. Megan and I, along with our good friend author Alison Rushby, are founders of the Your Kids Next Read community on Facebook. Search for Your Kids Next Read there to join us. All right, Megan. Now, anyone who's been following you on Facebook or other forms of social media over the last week will know that you have been dressing up quite a lot lately. But what are the highlights in the Kingdom of Megan this week?
Yeah, look, I've been really getting into the spirit of Book Week. So there's been a costume a day. It's been very exciting. But it's also another exciting time here in Brisbane. It's curbside collection time. And, you know,
do you dress up for that as well? Or?
Look, I could with items from the curbside. But we've got, I live in a cul-de-sac, and in the cul-de-sac and the streets around, there's between 11 and 18 children playing most weekends. And it's really lovely, but it's been hilarious watching from my front deck as the kids have gone as a gang around all of our piles, and they're sort of shifting stuff from one house to another. And I noticed that Chickpea came home with a wheelbarrow the other day, but you know, I've managed to put that wheelbarrow on somebody else's pile now. I don't want the wheelbarrow. So it's been lovely watching all of the kids. But more than anything, my absolute joy this week was, again, with all of the kids in the street. They were all curbside collectioning, and I found this random boy on my front deck, and I said, "Oh, hi, mate, what's your name?" And he introduced himself, and it turned out he was the stepbrother of one of the girls I know. And I said, "Oh, what are you reading there?" And he picked up a graphic novel that I had just got, it, Where the Wild Things Are, and he was reading it. Like, he just was completely immersed in this graphic novel. So I had this random child that I've never met in my life sitting on my front deck reading it. And then he moved himself inside, and he's lying on my couch reading it.
With the book.
I said, "We've actually got to go out, mate." And he's like, "Oh, I'm not finished the book." And I was like, "Oh, okay, well, you can stay here for a bit longer, but you're going to have to go home at some stage. You could bring the book back." He's like, "No, I just really want to finish it here." Then he asked me for a glass of water. I'm like, "I don't even know who you are." But it was delightful. He was a very sweet little boy.
Random book boy has moved into your house. Is he still there? Like, is he kind of, you know, buried under a bed somewhere with his nose in a book?
He came back the next day and stood in the driveway and just looked up at us, but we were going out again, so he didn't come back. But I'm sure he'll be back this weekend. He's very sweet.
That is so funny. I love it. There's probably a story in that. See, Jane Godwin, she would have had a whole picture book out of that by now.
She would have. It would have been published already on the shelf.
It would be on the shelves by the end of the day, beautifully illustrated, and everyone would just go, "Wow, she does so well."
Oh, Jane Godwin.
Oh, no.
What about you? What have you been up to?
Oh, well, I've been immersed in the world of Book Week author visits. I am just talking, you know, to myself a lot. Well, not really to myself, but there's a lot of Zooming going on. So I have been, you know, Zooming into various schools to talk about, books and writing and my books. And I share my five top tips for writing, which is always fun. It's been really good. It's been funny. And it's really interesting the way the different schools, you know, go about different things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like kid questions. So some will collate questions. Others, it's just like a free-for-all, and you've got billion responses in the chat, and you're trying to keep track of them. And so it's a lot of fun. And it's a short walk down the hallway with my coffee in my hand. I did do a little reel that showed sort of a behind the scenes on day one, behind the scenes version of what my book week morning looked like. Mm-hmm. So that was a bit of fun as well. But yeah, it's different, but it's still happening, and that, you know, is the main thing. I'm pretty excited about that. And I do love the fact that a whole bunch of the kids have actually even just dressed up at home for the author talk. Like, they're there in their costumes, and the teachers, you know, one was dressed as Harry Potter. I had a Thor, you know, like, it was just like this fantastic teachers just doing their absolute best to maintain the spirit of Book Week online. It's a wonderful thing to see.
Yeah.
So that's what I've been up to.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a book week is generally it's a highlight of an author's year. It often lasts at least a month. It's, you know, often you're in schools, you're talking to kids. It's a really big and fun time. And this is just like a, you know, slightly smaller version of it. But it's, as I said, I'm just grateful it's still happening. So
Doing the
that's
best
the
we
main
can.
thing. Doing the best we can. All right. Speaking of doing the best we can, we should probably move on in our podcast. Let's look at our book mail. We do love the book mail section. What have you got for us this week in the book mail, Megan?
Oh, I've had some fantastic book mail this week. First up, I've got Grace's Escape by Louise Park, who is a favourite of mine and I think of yours too.
Yes.
I love a Louise Park book.
Yes.
And this one, I haven't read it yet, but I'm going to read you the blurb. Grace and her mother have moved from Broome to a real-life castle steeped in literary history. You had me there, Louise.
Yeah, right,
and
there. I'm in.
And Grace has discovered that she can slip back in time to previous incarnations of the castle. But this time, when Grace travels back in time, she has to help find two sisters who were supposed to be staying at the castle and have been kidnapped along the way. During her travels, she has the good fortune to meet Beatrix Potter, J.M. Barrie, and Mae Gibbs. It just sounds fantastic.
Doesn't
and I can't
it?
Wait to give it to Chickpea. It's got some really good author's notes at the back with a bit of information about Mae Gibbs and J.M. Barrie and Beatrix Potter. And it looks to me like it's about from the main character is 12, and my rule of thumb is usually if you read around or a little bit younger than the main character in the book. So I'm saying from 9+ this one looks, and it's got a gorgeous front cover.
Yeah, the cover is great. I've seen the cover around, and it is really a lovely cover. I really like it.
Yeah, Burbage does a good job of their covers. I like a good cover. So I'm really looking forward to that one. And then the second one I'm also terribly excited about. It's the What on Earth Institute of Wonder by Lisa Nichol. A mind-boggling expedition into the secrets of the animal kingdom with only an invisible map of the human heart as a guide. Unless, of course, you count the talking parrot. What on earth could possibly go wrong? One elephant, one kakapo, one unlicensed teenage driver, one boy waiting for the world to end, and a 12-year-old girl with a very special gift.
Wow.
So, yeah. Now, I have a deep love of Lisa Nichol books. I loved Dr. Boogaloo and the Girl Who Lost Her Laughter to the point that I typed out quotes from that book and framed them and hung them on my children's walls. And then Vincent and the Grandest Hotel on Earth, I cried in that and I laughed in that. I started reading this latest one last night, but I fell asleep because I was just so tired. But the first chapter already just, it had me hooked. I really feel like Lisa does a great job. So I'm going to finish that one this weekend. And then my final book, oh, look, Bob Graham, Maxine, this one is, and it's not out yet, but I want you to pre-order it because I can tell you this one is going to be a bestseller. It's really funny that it arrived this week. In fact, I got shivers down my spine because I'd just been talking to my preps about Max, because Max by Bob Graham is probably my favourite Bob Graham book, and I've been talking about how brave Max was and we were going to be brave like Max, and you know, I've been having a lot of fun with Max at school this week, and then Maxine arrived in the mail, and it's a companion title to Bob Graham's Max, and it starts with Max's mum being pregnant and they're telling Max that he's going to be a big brother, and when Maxine is born, her first words and her first steps and her first flight happen really quite easily for her. But as Maxine grows and she starts school, she doesn't feel very much anymore like she quite fits in. In fact, she's not quite sure she feels comfortable being a superhero at all.
Oh.
And she has to convince her family that not all superheroes need to wear capes. So she's a very, very strong-willed, incredibly smart girl, and it's about dreaming big and embracing who you are, and it's about families letting children be who they are. It's got a gorgeous page where the grandparents are a little bit devo and they sort of mumble children of today, and you know, but it's about, there's this absolutely beautiful, beautiful line. Oh my gosh, there's just so much to love about this. I also told my students at school this week, that there's two things with Bob Graham books you have to do. You must read the end papers. There's no words, but you must read them, because Bob Graham always starts and ends his books on the end papers, and you always must look out for another Bob Graham book in his books. He always illustrates one of his other books into his books. And in fact, in Ellie's Dragon, we found Bob Graham himself on the first page of Ellie's Dragon, and he was putting one of his other books into a grocery bag. So he's very, very clever. He's great. And I just found this line in the book that I love. Maxine, when the grandparents are sort of saying, kids of today, and, you know, mum saying, you know, we've never worn jeans in the Lightning family. We're superheroes. And Maxine just says, things will always be changing, mummy. And I just think that's such a beautiful line. Oh,
isn't it?
Oh, it's a divine
Bob Graham.
It made
it's
me
another
feel
one that never puts a foot wrong.
Oh, look, he doesn't.
We're lucky, aren't we? We've got so many amazing authors. We're
we
so
really
lucky.
Do. I'm really so excited lucky. To take this one to school next week and share it. And the kids at St. Peter's don't know yet that, you know, the girls at St. Aidan's were always like, oh, Mrs. Daly's got a book before it's come out in the shops. The kids at St. Peter's don't know yet the excitement that I had in being able to bring in, you know, pre-publication copies. So I'm so excited.
Ooh,
to share
they're prepared.
That
you see, you are very excited. I did say you were very excited right up front.
Quite overexcited this week. Yeah, it's that book week nervous tension, you know. So
yes. All right. Well, I've actually got four to talk about this week, and I'm only going to go short with them because, you know, I that's what I tend to do. But I've got this beautiful book here called Ada and the Galaxies, and it's a US book. It's by Alan Lightman, who is a best-selling author and renowned physicist, and Olga Pastuchev, I think that's how you would say it, and it's illustrated by Susanna Chapman. It's called Ada and the Galaxies, and it's about Ada, who loves the stars and loves to go to Maine to visit her grandparents to see the stars, but then she has to, like, wait for nighttime, so she spends her days, you know, poking about with her grandfather, looking at the daytime world, and then, you know, night finally falls, and you know, then there's a fog and she can't see the stars, so then there's another day where we have to look at other things. And it's a beautiful kind of, there's a lot of information in it about galaxies and about the interconnectedness of the natural world, and the illustrations actually layer photographs taken from the Hubble telescope into the art.
Chippy and I read it last night, and after I left her room, she then spent ages looking at those images.
Yeah, they're amazing. Like, the artwork is amazing, and it just this idea of the connection between the stars and the earth, and it's really very lovely. And I've actually spent, you know, this morning talking to schools about, you know, where ideas come from. And one of the ideas behind the Mapmaker Chronicles was this night that my son, Book Boy, and I were out looking at the stars, because it's something that we love to do, because we have the most amazing, you know, we don't have a lot of light pollution where we live. And so the stars are the skies are enormous and the stars are enormous. And so for me, it was just, it's like a close-up look at the stars, which you don't really get to see much. So I really enjoyed, you know, getting that one and having a look at that one. So that was beautiful. That's out, I think, on the 1st of September. And then I received quite a different picture book, which is called Drover by Nerida McMullen and Sarah Anthony. And this is such a gorgeous looking book. It's got the
read
most
that
amazing.
One last night too.
Oh, And you're one-upping me.
Well, I know, but you're lucky I didn't put that one, these two, in as my book mail, because anyway, go ahead. But I have those as well.
Okay. And did you also think Drover was quite beautiful and lovely?
Oh, my gosh. Absolutely stunning.
Well, I'll read you the blurb on this one. Courageous, clever, and daring, Drover is one of a kind. Traveling through the heart of the outback, Drover delivers a mob of cattle. Searing heat, dust and flies, hardship and danger, these are all just part of the job. But there's no place Drover would rather be. This is the truly remarkable story of a legendary drover, Edna Jessop. And when I read that, when I read the back, and I thought, yes, go Edna. And it's this, you know, because it's droving is a very male story in the Australian, you know, when you look at sort of history books and the Australian sort of history overall, it's a very male story. And this is a very female story within that. And I just thought, fantastic. And it's gorgeous. So that one is also out on the 1st of September, Drover by Nerida McMullen and Sarah Anthony. And then I have a new one from Thomas Taylor, which I know that a lot of our Your Kids Next Read group will be very excited about, because Mallamanda was a very big hit in that particular in our group. This is a new Erie on Sea mystery. It's called Shadow Ghast. And if you love the work of Thomas Taylor, which I know there's a lot of you out there that do, that then you will also love this one. Welcome to Erie on Sea, where nothing is as it seems. On the eve of ghastly night, a hypnotic stage magician turns up in Erie on Sea and makes an unexpected claim on Herbie. Violet's guardian, the owner of the Erie Book Dispensary, vanishes into thin air, and others soon follow. Are these events connected? Herbie and Violet are determined to find out. But surrounded by so much shadow and illusion, will they ever uncover the truth? So I'm sure that will be a smash hit. And then my last one this week is actually a YA novel. It's called Anything But Fine by Tobias Madden. And it's all about Luca, who is ready to audition for the Australian Ballet School. All it takes to crush his dreams is one misstep and a broken foot. Poor Luca. Jordan is the gorgeous rowing star and school captain of Luca's new school. Everyone says he's straight, but Luca's not sure. As their unlikely bond grows stronger, Luca starts to wonder, who is he without ballet, and is he setting himself up for another heartbreak? So it's a gorgeous cover, like it's got that sort of lovely YA romance vibe about it. And I think that, you know, it's going to be, it'll be a very popular read in that YA space. So those are my book week, my book mail options for this week, which is, it's been a big week for me, hasn't it?
For both of us with book mail, yeah.
All right, let's move on to our bingo question. And if you are listening to us for the first time, our bingo question is a question that comes up over and over in the Your Kids Next Read Facebook community. We have over 20,000 members now, and our bingo questions still continue to be fairly, you know, there's probably 20 to 25 that are just a constant as they come through. And this one is one of them. It's one that comes up regularly at the start of the year, and then it usually kind of pops up again around about July, August, I find, because that's when the school year is really underway. And this question is one for Megan Daly to answer. You ready, Megan?
I am.
What's the story with school readers?
I'm less excited now, you can tell.
I know. Look, it's not an easy question. It's one of those things where if you've never ever come across a school reader and you are in your first year of kindy and your child is bringing home school readers, they may not be what you expected. Mm. And by the time you get to grade two and you have been going through many, many, many school readers over and over again, you can be a little bit done. I mean, and, you know, admittedly, some of them are not the most exciting reads in the world, but they have an entirely different purpose, don't they?
They do. Yeah. And look, I think it would be widely accepted, I think, that the early years of reading instruction, so those first few years at school, are really crucial in developing proficient readers. And classroom readers very much form a part of that learn to read toolkit, alongside a suite of other strategies and ongoing monitoring of student progress. But I think parents don't necessarily see that. First thing I want to say is please trust your child's teacher. Quality early childhood teachers and primary school teachers are to be trusted. They're experts in what each student's needs are in terms of reading, both in the school context and at home. So, you know, for example, don't change your child's reader level without first discussing your concerns with a teacher, because sometimes at home you might feel like your child's readers that are coming home are way too easy for your child. But there's often a really good reason for that. We want children to experience success and fluency in their reading as much as we want to challenge them. Mm. So classroom readers are used in the classroom context to teach specific skills, to model writing styles, and to test reading ability. We've got a goal in mind for each child with readers. We want lower level readers to develop confidence and fluency, and we want those higher level readers to be extended and challenged. But there's this balancing act, and it's critically important that we get that balance right between helping children become independent readers and you know, build their confidence in that, but also nurture and support them. So, you know, look, there is a method to the madness. There's also a huge amount of There's a huge amount of debate around school readers. Many of you will have heard of the reading wars, and decodable readers are very much an accepted part of the learn to read process now. So my 13-year-old daughter did not have decodable readers when she went through. My 10-year-old did not have decodable readers. Both of them are proficient readers. The small bees are both doing decodable readers, and I adore them. And I've been heavily invested in researching about decodable readers, and I'm very on board with them, and I absolutely
can you explain what a decodable reader is, because where my boys are 14 and 17 yes, and did not have decodable readers.
Okay, yeah. So a traditional reader has got words on the page, simple sentences, very predictable storylines, and the words are supported by the images. So the words might say the cat sat on the mat, and the picture is of the cat sitting on the mat.
Right.
Now, the problem with that is that the child is really guessing what the words are. They're relying on the picture to guess what the words are. A decodable reader is one where they don't have to guess. They can sound out, they can decode the words themselves, so they're phonetic. Mm. And they are, sometimes they have almost nonsense words in them, but it's about being able to decode. And the boys, the small bees, have decodable readers in print form, but they also have really good electronic versions of decodable readers, which they have read on the small bee as opposed to the smallest bee. So small bee is now 7, and he is a really great reader. He has well and truly moved on from that sort of thing and is reading quite fluently now, but I can see that he was very well supported in that learn to read process. So there's a lot of stuff around readers, and this is without taking into account any diagnosed or diagnosable literacy issues and the attitude of your child towards readers. So what I really want to say is that a reader is not, sometimes this comes across as a bit controversial, but a reader is not a book as such. It's a teaching tool. Yeah. Books that you borrow from your child's library are a piece of literature. They're self-selected by your child. They're a recreational read. And they help your child to develop an emotional attachment to reading and develop lifelong reading habits. So readers and library books need to coexist because they each have their role and distinct purpose. Classroom readers are about the mechanics of reading and skill development. Recreational reads are about the emotional connection to books. And I really do want to encourage you to keep both of those in your head. I know a lot of parents... A lot of parents ask in Your Kids Next Read, and I get asked it a lot at school, you know, can I borrow readers from the school library? You can't really, because like I said, they're a teaching tool. They're not a library book.
Yeah.
But there are some books out there, and I know you've got some to suggest as well, but the best ones I have ever seen are the Sally Ripon ones, The School of Monsters, which are brand new. I've reviewed them on Children's Books Daily, and I'll put that link in the show notes. They are absolutely designed to be like a reader, but they are by Sally Ripon. So they've got that extra element.
There's a story.
There's a story. And they're just really clever. So the smallest bee, he absolutely adores School of Monsters, and he has had success with them. And that's the key, having success. And I've also, my own children, I know your boys really enjoyed them as well. My own children enjoyed the Andy Griffiths Little Readers, The Cat on the Mat is Flat, Frog on a Log in a Bog. And I think you've got a third one. So there are a few out there, but I don't think until these Sally Ripon ones came out that I'd seen anything in the recreational reading space that matched what parents wanted. So I think this may, Sally Ripon, I'm sure, will do more of these, and I'm sure other people will start to do some. But at the same time, I would like to, as I just said, urge caution with that, because you want to still be reading high quality children's literature, which is a complex interplay between images and words and beautiful chapter books, and you want that length. So, you know, do your readers, absolutely go out and buy Sally Ripon's School of Monsters, but continue doing all of your recreational reading as well.
Yeah, I think that's the key, isn't it? Just to recognize that the school reader is a part of the mechanics of learning to read. And then there is developing a love of literature, which are two different things. And I think that it's really important to, you know, persist, like even when the school readers drive you crazy, and they will, and they do. And both of my boys were great readers, and they still drove me crazy. Like, they just went over and over again. We did have the Andy Griffiths books because they felt like real books, and the boys were excited when they were very little that they could read them by themselves, and they felt like they were reading a real book by themselves. The other one that we absolutely loved, which is very hard to get now, is the Paul Jennings Rascal series, which was just like, that was fantastic.
I know. I had them at St. Aidan's. They're lucky I didn't steal them.
Well, I've got them. I have actually, like, I've done a massive book haul when we moved house, as you know, and I've kept them. Just because, well, I can't give them up, you know,
like, special.
Particularly knowing how difficult they are to get as well. So, but yeah, so look, I think if we can just all remember that. And yes, school readers, there's a real skill in writing them.
I've got a chapter in my book which Pam Rushby wrote.
Yeah, and I like, you know, I think that that's important to remember too. And so, you know, when you share a reader in the Your Kids Next Read group and you go, oh, this is terrible.
Someone wrote it.
Someone put a lot of work into it, and so we are always probably going to remove that. I just need you to know that because, you know, we have to accept that there's a real skill in putting a school reader together, and a school reader is a very particular tool, and that's important to remember too.
And that author has been given a criteria to write to. So
absolutely. They've got like 40 words in which to create something. It's not easy at all. All right, so moving on, we're going to look at our quick tips this week, and I'm going to start, and I've just got a few tips for, because I know we do actually have quite a few authors who listen to Your Kids Next Read podcast. Hello, authors. I hope you're having a lovely book week. I just had a couple of quick tips, and particularly if you are perhaps a new author or you are writing for children at the moment and you'd love to be an author one day, I've just got a couple of quick tips for authors doing author talks, and I'm going to focus on doing them, you know, virtually at the moment, because that's what we have to do. So let's just work with that, what we have to do. So I've got three tips. The first one is to understand the tech. You need to practice. And ideally, you would just like practice with a friend. So if you've got to do a Zoom talk and you have never used Zoom before, set up a meeting with a friend. Like, I would just set one up with Megan, and I would make sure I understood how it all worked, how the co-hosting worked, what I needed to do to mute everybody if I need to. I mean, most of the time schools will actually set the links up themselves. And in fact, I prefer that, because that way they're managing the kids and I'm not having to deal with that. But just understand how to get yourself into a Zoom and what you need to do. Make sure you remember to unmute yourself when you get there, because that's a trap for young players. And then from that point, it should go fairly smoothly. I would also suggest that you get a decent ring light. So ring lights are a very simple, inexpensive additional light that you can put in your office. You want that light to be in front, like, you want to be looking into it. Most of them will come with a mobile phone holder in the middle of them. Obviously, when you're doing Zoom stuff, you're generally going to be on a laptop or a desktop. So I just put mine behind, but it's a constant light source. It flattens the room out. It lights the back of the room up for you, and it means that everyone can see you well. And lighting is really important. Lighting makes a huge difference to how your talk feels. If it's kind of dim and dull in your office, and the kids can't really even see you properly, they're going to find it very difficult to engage with you. You want a spotlight on you, so get yourself a ring light. They're really inexpensive and they're not difficult to find. And then the third tip I have for you is just be prepared for anything, because, and that goes for any author talk you ever do in your entire life. It doesn't matter if it's in person, it doesn't matter if it's, you know, on Zoom, whatever. Be prepared for anything. Be prepared for the kid who's going to change their, you know, their moustache. Be prepared for the kid.
Background changes.
Oh, so someone was telling me about, they did a school talk. I can't remember who it was. Someone was telling me they did a school talk, and what the kids were doing was they would unmute themselves just for like 3 seconds and go boop. So just enough, very quickly, to make the noise, but not so the teachers could see who'd done it. And it
I
was
hope
like
no kids are listening to this.
It went on and on and on the whole way around. And it was the author, maybe it was Sue Whiting, and she was just saying that all she could do was just keep talking like nothing was happening. And so you just have to be ready for anything, and, you know, and to kind of like just keep talking. It's all you can do. All right. That's all my tips. What about you?
Tips, yeah. Shout out to my sister who did my Zoom practice. It is really crucial to do that Zoom practice because I learned so many things when I did my first ever Zoom practice with Amber, and yeah, I would have been a disaster otherwise, so practice beforehand.
Do you remember when we were practicing our live streams? So we would do live streams in the Your Kids Next Read, and we had a whole section at the back of StreamYard that was just, we called it the practice ring, just so we could sort of work out how to get in and out and what we needed to do. It's really important that you know what you're doing.
Yeah, it is. And my quick tips are around playing with story, and I wanted to do that in the episode where we talked about readers, because as well as you know, there's the practice of readers, and there's that, it's not often that much fun. So I want to remind everybody to play with stories as well. So how do we make early childhood, which is generally considered birth to 5 years, experiences with books playful, fun and engaging? Because we, like I said earlier, we want to build up some really strong neural pathways associating books with fun and playfulness. And play and literacy go hand in hand, not only in those first few years, but right up into the teen years. So my daughters are preparing for their book week parade next week, and my 13-year-old is still happy to dress up. She is actually super excited to embody the main character in Future Girl by Asphyxia next week. And, you know, I can see that she is still playing and enjoying with books. So I think that's great. But my three tips are role-playing stories. So setting up imaginative play objects, which may match the book that you've got at home or match a book's interest. You might have a bit of a run on dinosaur books, as I had with chickpea or dog books. And you've probably got toys that match. So setting up some play spaces which allow children to role-play the stories, innovate on the stories. And role-playing is a great way to kind of try out social situations. And it's lovely. Role-playing is fabulous. Small world scenes where children can retell stories and they can add to stories and play with characters and perspectives. When my girls were young, I used to love making small world scenes. And when I got the beautiful book Antarctica recently, in my head I was like, oh, do you think the smallest bees would play with a small world scene of Antarctica? I used to set up trays with frozen, you know, icebergs, and I'd have sand. And I was just so on board with all of that.
Oh, lordy wordy.
I know. I really could have been a mummy blogger. Like, I really
I'm in awe.
I want to embrace that side of childhood. I was fully on board with the glitter and the craft. I loved a good small world scene. I had about 10 at one stage in little wooden suitcases that I had purchased at Spotlight. And I had a jungle scene, and I had a farm scene, I had a circus scene, and I would pull those out, and my girls would look at them like, oh, here comes the small world scene again. But no, they did like them. I just loved them.
Oh, one day they'll talk about, remember those amazing small world scenes that Mum used to make for us?
I hope so. And then my final thing is playing with visuals. So playing with paint or other art materials in response to books. So my girls had a great time with I'm a Hungry Dinosaur and I'm a Dirty Dinosaur when they were a lot younger, and playing with paint or even just a paintbrush with water if you can't deal with the mess is a really lovely way to play with visuals. Just thinking then, it's so unusual that I've sort of got these two small boys in my life now, because I'd really moved on from that stage and I don't have my small world scenes anymore.
What? Didn't you save them? Gosh, if I'd gone to all that trouble, I would have had to like have them on display in the foyer for the rest of my life. You would not be able to come to my house without seeing my small world scenes.
Alison Tate, I'm a teacher librarian. My culling skills are legendary. I can cull anything with no emotion. The small world scenes are long gone.
No, but I'm a non-crafter. And so anything that I ever make that's got craft, I have a wombat that I had to knit when I went to that's a whole nother story. We can't get into that right now, but I've got this wombat that doesn't look like a wombat that I had to knit when my oldest son, so 17, was in a Steiner play group. So he must've been about two. And when you go to Steiner play group, you have you have to also be busy. So I, who cannot knit, was encouraged, you know, and when I say encouraged, it was sort of like, you're going to do this, to create myself a knitted wombat. So I knitted a wombat. And we went through this phase a little while ago where we were clearing out cupboards and things, and the builder was like, well, do we really have to keep this? I'm like, are you kidding me? I'm practically going to wear that on my head for the next 20 years. It's the only thing I've ever made. Anyway, that's a whole nother story. All right, we should probably, if we're into the knitted wombat phase of our conversation, we should probably wrap up.
Is this one of those times where we've like rambled or
no, no, this is not even waffle. This is good quality conversation. I'll have you know. All right, so what are we up to this week, Megan?
Oh, well, look, as this episode goes to air, it is Book Week across Australia. And for many states, we know that Book Week is going to be virtual. Queensland, where I am, is incredibly lucky at this point, at the time of recording, to be going with planned Book Week activities. So I've been, as you know, pulling out all of the costumes and getting hyped up for Book Week. And I cannot wait to reveal my piece de resistance costume next week.
What day will that be happening? Is it like later in the week?
No, the day that this podcast is released, so Wednesday morning, on the Thursday, I will be in my big Book Week costume. I'm excited.
All right. So, don't miss it, people. There's been some crackers. Like the Snow Queen, I think, was one of my personal favourites.
Where I made children cry. I made several kindy children cry because I embodied the Snow Queen, and I think it was a bit like...
So you kind of enjoyed that, right?
I did.
Are you channeling the Snow Queen? Fantastic.
Yeah, totally.
All right. But, well, I'll be looking forward to that.
Yeah, no, it's Book Week, but I know that I'm in a very privileged position to be able to go ahead with Book Week in person. So, but for so many of us, we are going to be being virtual. So I'm going to hand over to you, Al, to talk about what we are doing in Your Kids Next Read to help bring some joy to Book Week.
Oh, yes. So we're very, very excited because we are going to be holding our very own Book Week parade in the Your Kids Next Read Facebook group. Now, it's super simple to get involved in this. There will be a post that we will pop up on Friday morning at 9 a.m. and you are invited to post pictures of your kids in their Book Week costumes, in their Book Week get-ups. We want to know why they chose to be that particular character. And everyone will be able to ooh and ah over how amazing they look. It's going to be open from 9 till 3, the full school day, so you've got time to get creative if you kind of haven't really thought too much about it, which, let's face it, that's me. And we have got a whole stack of prizes to offer. So we've got... many Australian authors have generously donated books, which they will be sending out to the winners. We have the Taran of the Mammoths trilogy from Joe Sandhu. We have Wonderful Shoes by Emma Bowd and Tanya McCartney. We've got Little Legends by Adrian Beck and Nicole Hayes. We've got Turning Cartwheels by Amy Adney and Amy Calorti. We've got The Super Adventures of Ollie and Bee by Renee Tremmel, which you raved about a couple of weeks ago.
I did.
We have the brand new Kenzie and Max adventure from Jacqueline Harvey, which is always a winner. The Wolves of Grey Court, The Wolves of Grey Coat Hall by Lucinda Gifford. The Mapmaker Chronicles, Race to the End of the World by A.L. Tate, you might know her, and a whole stack more. So there's heaps of prizes on offer, and it's just a bit of fun. Like, join in, cheer on other people, show us what, you know, your amazing Book Week costume looks like, and you could win a prize. So we're really looking forward to having that. And I'm sure there'll be a photo of Megan in her, you know, ultimate Book Week costume. Well, yeah, actually, you'll just be entering. There'll be seven, won't there? Seven of Megan. And yeah, so we're looking forward to that. So if you want to get involved, join the Your Kids Next Read Facebook group. Just, I struggle to say that sometimes. The Your Kids Next Read Facebook community. Just search for Your Kids Next Read and join us there. You will find all our show notes from today's show at yourkidsnextread.com, and you will find Megan Daly at childrensbooksdaily.com, and you will find me at alisontate.com, all of the .coms, and we will look forward to seeing you next episode.
Happy Book Week.
You probably need to sound a bit more excited. Happy Book Week.